10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from London, this is The Morning Break with Emma Shepherd on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, it's Emma Shepherd on your Morning Break with Teachers Talk Radio, every Tuesday between 9 to 10 a.m. This morning, we're talking to our guests about the role of the pastoral and subject middle leader. Do comment on social media, message in your thoughts via the chat on the Podbean app, or call in to share your own experiences or questions about middle leadership this morning break on Teachers Talk Radio.
Live from London, this is The Morning Break with Emma Shepherd on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Good morning, it's Emma Shepherd with you this morning on Teachers Talk Radio. Very pleased to have you back as we are getting a little bit more spring weather outside. So if you are out walking this morning, listening to the show, or if you are getting up to bits and bobs around the house or in your offices at school, then welcome to our show and welcome to our topic this morning of middle leadership. We hope that today's show will be inspiring for anyone interested in applying for middle leadership roles or taking on a TLR in the future, or just interesting for any of you who are already middle leaders and are interested in hearing others' experiences of people in similar roles. So the middle leadership role is really varied, and we're going to be hearing from some subject leaders and pastoral leaders this morning. And they're all secondary based. In secondary, 39% of our teachers in schools, secondary schools, are middle leaders. And that is really ranging across a whole load of specialisms, so behaviour or pastoral or subject leads. So as we're chatting to our guests today, we'd love to hear your thoughts in the chat, anything that you're finding interesting about hearing about this such a diverse range of roles, any similar experiences that you have had to some of the guests that are joining us today, or any questions that you might have for them about their experiences. So if you're prepping those questions, we're going to be hearing from a head of English, a 2IC, a Key Stage 3 lead in history, a deputy head of sixth form, and a MFL, a languages curriculum leader. So you can join us on the Podbean app via the chat, or you can share your comments and your thoughts on Twitter using the hashtag TTRadio. And my personal handle is @materntcpd if you want to tag me in directly. So we're going to start off this morning in Northumberland, and we're going to be joined by Sondos Bowker, who is a head of English. Sondos has had a very interesting pre-teaching career, completing a PhD and then volunteering or working with the Brilliant Club, with students with the Brilliant Club, and then completing her training through Schools Direct, and then stepping into the current head of department role. And I think, Sondos, good morning.
Morning. Hi, I'm sorry, I'm dragging the baby at the moment.
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Too. So you're a twin mum, aren't you, Sondos?
I am, and my twins are 4 months old now, so they're a bit of a handful. They're meant to be asleep, but they decided to join us.
Well, it's because they wanted to hear mum on the show, and they wanted to hear you chat to us. So we are absolutely delighted that they're with us. So if they do contribute, then we'll listen to what they have to say and take their questions as they bring them to us. So please don't worry about their little noises in the background. We are delighted to have you and to have them with us. So you're currently on mat leave with your boys, 4 months.
Yeah.
That's such a lovely age. They're all squishy at this age, aren't they?
That's right, very squishy.
And I know that, I mean, I'm not a parent of multiples, but as a parent of just one child at a time, I think everybody who has one at a time salutes multiples parents. So huge sort of Shiro worship there for you. But you're going to be talking to us this morning about your head of department role. Yeah. And so why don't, do you want to start just by telling us a little bit about your department and just maybe adding a bit more detail to the introduction that I gave about how you came into this role?
Yeah, I work in a middle school in Northumberland. I actually come from the Midlands originally, so the three-tier system was a bit of an unusual one for me. I didn't really know it existed outside of America. But my department is one of about 12 English teachers, and it's a mix of primary and secondary specialists. So I trained in secondary. I spent a bit of time working between the middle school and the high school. Because we've got the primary and the secondary background, it means that whilst I manage the English for the school, I actually only directly line manage the Key Stage 3 teachers, the Year 7 and 8 teachers. But I taught kind of across the school. So that was a bit of a baptism of fire for me coming in, teaching SATs and SPAG and things where my training was very much secondary based, but it seems to work. I did nearly a year of normal school before the world came to an end and the pandemic hit, I found out I was pregnant about a week into the first lockdown, so that was a shift, kind of a learning curve for everybody. And obviously at the moment I'm on mat leave while everybody else is beavering away at school. But it's a really interesting dynamic. And kind of prior to coming into the school, I think I kind of took the scenic route to where I am now. I didn't quite finish my PhD. It's kind of sat there on my computer at the moment, but I decided about kind of halfway through that working in the university sector wasn't really for me, and I'd rather work in schools. So I'd done a bit of work in my current school with the Brilliant Club, and that was how I kind of found a route into teaching, and now I love it.
Amazing. So it's quite a special position and perception, sort of perspective to have in the middle school role, because I think I'm an English teacher as well, so hello. and what we often find is that we just don't have that understanding of what happens in primary literacy or primary English. And so when they come to us in year seven, we're not always able to sort of jump off from where they left off. We often have to sort of pause and see where they're at first and then get going with them. So I imagine that having that insight is quite interesting in terms of progress for your students. And I mean, for as far as you're concerned, why are you and middle leaders across the country so important to the smooth running of a school?
I like being made to sound important. That's quite nice for me on a Tuesday morning. I think I was thinking about this before. I think that in a sense we're, I guess, a bit of a glue. I see my role as trying to hold things together for my department, but also to champion our subjects. I think I see myself as an English teacher first, and that's why I think the fact that middle leaders spend most of their time in the classroom is really important, because that's what we are foremost. We're there. So that's a baby's laughing away. So I think
hello, baby.
I think the fact that we spend, you know, most of our timetable is actually in front of the children teaching the subject means that we can, I guess, speak from experience. In my first year, so when I started the role, it was a discussion I had with my head teacher that traditionally before I came along, the head of English would only teach in year 7 and 8 because they tended to be the subject specialists rather than the primary specialists. We decided that it would be a good idea for me to teach across the school. So my first year I taught in year 5, 6, 7 and 8. And that I guess gave me a bit of credibility, so that, you know, it was only when teaching my year 5 children that I realized that year 5 children can take, you know, 3 hours to write the date and the title, and then that's the end of the lesson. So that if I'm sat a meeting with the year 5 team and saying, actually, we need to get through these 6 texts and do XYZ and, you know, master SPAG by October, and then I realized that that's just not doable. You can have all the high expectations that you want without actually spending that time in the classroom. You very quickly lose momentum. So I think, yeah, being in the classroom, but also having that, I guess, strategic vision for where you want the department to go, and being keen to, you know, realizing that some things aren't realistic and some things do need changing. I think that's what I found most useful.
There's that authenticity, isn't there, in the head of department role in particular, in terms of leading by example, being good at the teaching thing, and knowing what it is to be a teacher, that I think makes the leadership persona has to be quite authentic in order to get that buy-in and that trust from your team. Thank you. That's a really nice, insightful thing to share. You were an RQT, is that right, before you stepped into your current role?
Is that what you were? Yeah, that's right. So I applied for my job, my current role, during my NQT year.
Mm-hmm.
My first year was kind of as an RQT, which is a bit of a weird situation.
So what do you see as the biggest difference between the head of department role now and sort of your experience as an NQT or a classroom teacher?
I think a lot of it is obviously, I guess, being part of wider decisions. So, you know, as an NQT, whilst I had a bit, you know, I'd done different things in education and you know, I taught at university and everything before I went into teaching, very much that NQT year is a bit of a survival year. You know, can you make sure that this content is taught to the best of your ability and also be, you know, a visible person in your department and pull your weight? Whereas as head of English, my priority really is to all the children in the school rather than the ones who are directly in front of me. So I was quite fortunate in my NQT year and in my training year that I was given quite a lot of responsibility, because my training year I was employed by the school, I was actually teaching from the get-go, but that duty to actually make sure that this English works for all the classes rather than just the ones in front of me was I guess the biggest shift, without losing that sense of the fact that yes, I'm in this position, but I wouldn't pretend to be the most knowledgeable about, you know, year six English, because I've got primary specialists who have spent a lot longer in teaching than me. So it's about drawing on that, I guess, expertise and being okay with saying, actually, I don't know, what do you think? And I think that's worked quite well. I think that's really helped me to form kind of relationships with people in my team, because I'd worked in my department as an NQT before coming in and starting to kind of make changes to the curriculum as well.
So a balance there of sort of the amplifying of your impact and the directive that you have there, but also empowering others and facilitating and using your team to maximize their potential, I suppose, as a team, rather than trying to do everything yourself as a head of department.
Yeah, and it's hard. I struggle with not trying to do everything myself. That's one of the, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, because, you know, I'm coming in, I wanted to, you know, my interview, I remember saying, you know, I want to do this and I want to do this. And then you actually get there and you realise that you're not just, a department isn't just one person. And I was lucky enough, my school put me on the MPQML in my first year. So one of the things I learned there is actually that I went in and, you know, I felt that, you know, workload was really important, and being mindful of taking, you know, being careful about workload of my team and making sure that their well-being is prioritized. But what I learned is that there's a balance there between other people's workload and my own workload, because if my workload is astronomical, people aren't really going to like the fact that I'm taking ownership for things that they, you know, they're stakeholders and they want to do for themselves. And also it means that my teaching will suffer, and that's still the best bit of my job, is actually being in front of the children. So I've learned a little bit about that balance, but I'm still not very good at balance.
It's a learning journey, isn't it? And I think you shared so many really lovely nuggets there for anybody listening considering their own leadership, middle leadership role, or considering a middle leadership in the role in the future. So thank you so much, Sundas, for joining us today. I hope you have a lovely rest of the day with the boys, and please do continue listening as we hear from other middle leaders today.
That's lovely, thank you.
So we have been talking a little bit to Sundas Bowker about her middle leadership role as a head of department up in Northumberland. And I think what we've heard already is that the middle leadership role, even a simple head of department role, is so varied. They can span from departmental or whole school TLRs, so things like literacy leads or SMSC leads, to more traditional pastoral and subject heads of department or year group. But even with Sondas there, her head of department role is in a middle school context, and so spans Upper Key Stage 2 and Key Stage 3, which is a little bit of a twist on our more traditional secondary head of department role that goes 11 to 16 or 11 to 18. And even the lead practitioner role, which is my role, is included in this really rich landscape of middle leadership. And Sondas there shared with us some of the things that she enjoys about the role and also some of the things that she's still learning. And Lindsay East, thank you on the chat, saying such a hard balance of how much you do versus how much you ask others to do. And she says, Sondas, it sounds like you've got it right. So really nice to hear that modelling of a positive approach to workload, but also sort of accepting that everybody, whether we're team leaders, middle leaders, senior leaders, or classroom teachers, are part of this learning journey about learning how best to do this new role. So Sondas obviously had a wealth of experience in her previous career, lecturing in universities and also working with the Brilliant Club. But she stepped in, so it was her NQT year, just after her NQT year, she took on this middle leadership role. And I'm always fascinated when I meet middle leaders or think about the middle leaders in my own school, about the real variety of experience that we have within our middle leadership teams. We've got colleagues who step in between subject and pastoral middle leadership. We've got colleagues who do a very sort of step-by-step route. They take on a 2IC, then they take on a head of department, they take on a whole school role, and then they work their way up into senior leadership. But we've also got a fantastic number of middle leaders across the country for whom that head of department or that head of year role is the absolute dream job. And it's the one that they sit into and they stay in for a long time because the purposefulness of it and the professional expertise and the richness of being innovative and dealing with changes in curriculum and changes in student context and team changes and empowering others is a really satisfying role to be in. And I think that's why a lot of people do sort of aspire to the middle leadership role, and then that's where they want to stay. Our next guest actually joined us over the weekend because she's teaching right now, Sitara Amin, she is a Key Stage 3 history lead, and her story is fascinating to share because she shows us the sort of step-by-step route into middle leadership. She's got her Key Stage 3 TLR now and may look at heads of department roles in the future. But for anybody who's listening who's thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure I would do what Sondas did and take on all of that responsibility straight away, but are interested in seeing what's out there and seeing how roles can gradually increase in responsibility. Let's hear from Sitara now and see how she stepped into her Key Stage 3 history role.
So good afternoon on Sunday, Sitara, but it will be morning when we do listen to this recording on the morning break on Teachers Talk Radio, where we've been discussing the role of middle leaders. So thank you so much for joining us this morning. Sitara Amin is a Key Stage 3 history lead in Cambridgeshire, who also has responsibility for the middle years programme at her school. And she is also a participant on the MTPG project's accreditation. She stepped into her current role fairly recently, having just returned from a period of maternity leave with her first child. So thank you so much for joining us and for giving up part of your weekend to chat to us today, Sitara. Are you well? How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. It's nice to be involved, especially after the MTPT project. It's just nice to broaden my horizons, really.
Brilliant, and be sharing some ideas. I know that a lot of our audience members are on leave simply because of the timing of our show, so I'm sure they'll be really interested to know that the people that we're talking to have been involved in the accreditation and the community in general. So as a Key Stage 3 history lead, It's quite a nice role, really, because you've got sort of, you're not restricted in some ways by the exam specification. But can I ask you, what's your favourite thing about this new role that you've stepped into?
The opportunity to be really creative. I think I love my old history teacher when I was at school, and I hated her. She used to write on a board and she was incredibly dull, and the topics were very British focused history, whereas actually we're in an amazing part of the year and the last few years where actually history is becoming far more multicultural. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting to watch that develop at Key Stage 3 level. So mm-hmm. we've introduced new topics on the medieval period about tolerance and acceptance, and we've expanded our British Empire work. Hopefully we'll do that next year. We're starting to introduce a unit on the Mughals, which I know nothing about, but mm-hmm. someone else knows loads. So I'm learning loads about the world in which, you know, our students live in, not just a small little niche country we're in at the moment.
Must be a really nice way to sort of help them gain a sense of their identity quite early on in their secondary school careers.
I think so, especially when identity is quite a difficult thing to grasp with social media. Students have portrayed one thing online and then another thing in the classroom and another image at home. And actually, especially for, I work at an international focused leaning school where we teach the IB, and actually a lot of our students are Black and ethnic minorities, and it's actually nice to represent them through the curriculum. And especially as an Asian woman, that's really important to me, that I have a voice and they have a voice, and actually as an Asian woman I can enable them to do so.
And you mentioned a few things there that you're talking about, exciting new developments in your Key Stage 3 curriculum. How much, as the Key Stage 3 lead, how much have you had an input in designing that curriculum?
From the beginning, so I was presented with a lovely long list of topics that everyone was interested in teaching, and actually everyone's very passionate about, so I didn't actually want to change anything because it was just so wonderful in the first place. Mm-hmm. And actually I have given the teachers that I work with a lot of free rein. We do a lot of discussion at the end of independent planning time. So we've got extended CPD, we've had training days where teachers have just gone and done their own thing. And actually it's nice, then we will come together as a group, unfortunately over Zoom or Teams recently, and discuss schemes of work and discuss the resources and tweak them and ask those annoying little questions, which actually provide further room to talk, really.
Almost being the overseer, helping the jigsaw to come together in the way that is beneficial for the whole department. It sounds like a really exciting just a project to have ownership over. So a lot of our listeners might be teachers currently, so sort of classroom teachers, and might be looking for that first step up the subject progression ladder into a TLR position, or maybe looking at a second in department position or a Key Stage 3 lead position. And with that, they'll obviously have to be working with a head of department, but with more responsibility for the design and development and accountability of the department. So what would you recommend as your top tips for any new seconds or Key Stage leads working with heads of department?
Ask for help if something goes wrong. I'm not very good at asking for help. I'm learning to ask for help, and actually just ask for help if there's something you're not sure about, because I came into a Key Stage 3 lead into a new school after maternity leave, after what was a baby in lockdown, and actually I was very reluctant to ask for help because I was like, I just want to show what I'm doing. But actually it's having the humility, but also I think it takes great strength to ask for help, especially from a department head. I've got a very experienced department head, and I felt like I was almost bothering him, but actually it taught me a lot of confidence in myself, that actually you know what you're talking about and your questions are just as important. So it's asking for help as a validation of what you know, but also to help you move along, but also to be open and upfront with your experience, because I am experienced. I've been teaching for 10 years, but I'm also not very experienced. I think it's learning that balance between saying I don't know and actually, yes, I do. And that's where you have to read and you have to research. And I spend a lot of time poring over magazines. I spend far too much time, according to my husband, on Twitter, asking for help. And I think it all bubbles down to that, really, just asking for help from your department head or from the teaching community. But if something goes wrong or something's not working, or something just doesn't fit together, it's just talking to the right people at the right time.
I suppose if you don't establish that working relationship between yourself and your head of department, then your head of department doesn't know where they need to develop you or where they need to sort of what they can trust and feel confident in your expertise. And you talk there about this idea of the balance of confidence, really. There are certain things that our seconds and our key stage three leads are incredibly good at, and that's obviously why they've been appointed to the post. But then we're all growing, we're all learning at every stage in our careers, really, whether we've been doing the job for 5 minutes or 50 years. So that message about communicating with each other and asking for help and asking appropriate and good questions is really important. So it's been a real, really lovely conversation for me. I've actually never done the subject route. I had a brief sort of emergency ownership over key stage parts of key stage three at one point, but not something that I was able to settle into very nicely. So I'm quite envious hearing you talk about the design and the curriculum things and being able to work with your department there. So thank you very much for joining us today, Satara. I'm sure that everybody listening will be really interested in hearing how things go with your department.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
So something that I've been really struck by just listening to Satara again and listening to talking to Sundas earlier is the people aspect of the middle leadership role. I often sort of watch my middle leaders and their spreadsheets and their trackers and their exams forms that they're signing off and the attendance data and think how managerial it must be and how many sort of boring administrative tasks there must be involved in that. And I've taken on a little bit of line management of EAL this year, but actually, as the line manager, I'm fairly immune from that. That's the EAL manager that does a lot of that sort of nitty-gritty work. But actually, neither Sundas nor Satara have focused on that in our conversations. And it really goes to show, I think, how special the middle leadership role is in terms of building relationships and having that creative design over the curriculum, if we're in subject leader roles, over the curriculum or over the pastoral culture of the school. So really lovely to hear from both of those guests. And if you'd like to add your comments, you can do so through the Podbean app in the chat if you're listening through the Podbean app, or you can add them onto Twitter if you're listening later using the hashtag TTRadio. Teacher Talk Radio are also at TTRadio 2021. And my personal hashtag is at comment. No, it's not. At maternity CPD. I've got two. One for the MTPD project and one for mostly talking about baking is my other account when I get it right and wrong. So after the break, we're going to be hearing from a deputy head of sixth form and a curriculum leader for MFL. So if you have any questions for them, please do share them. But we're going to hear the news now and see what is going on in the big wide world.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
This is Tom Hopkins-Burke with your latest education news. A West Sussex primary school has urged parents to refrain from wearing skimpy outfits on school grounds. Seymour Primary School in Crawley issued a letter entitled Playground Etiquette to all parents and guardians. The letter criticised parents who wore revealing outfits that look like underwear or were for other times of day, such as pyjamas. A statement from the school maintained that the guidance was well-intended, but the wording could have been less prescriptive. Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, has been re-elected unopposed to serve a second term. Barton had spent 15 years as head teacher of King Edward VI School in Bury St Edmunds before his election as General Secretary in 2017. The president of the ASCL, Richard Sheriff, said that Barton had risen to the enormous challenge of leading the association through the COVID pandemic with great integrity and humanity. The Welsh Government has announced a new £65 million international learning exchange programme to replace the European Union's Erasmus scheme. The International Learning Exchange Programme will run between 2022 and 2026. It will enable learners and staff from Wales and abroad to benefit from international exchanges. Under the scheme, 15,000 participants from Wales will go on overseas mobility exchanges in 4 years, with 10,000 participants moving to Wales for study or work. The UK government's £110 million Turing scheme, which starts in September, will only fund outbound students rather than inward mobilities. That's your latest education news with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
So,
I don't know if I would have enjoyed being the person who had to write that letter to parents or having to deal with that on duty as a GAITE. Another pro maybe of a middle or senior leadership role, having to be in contact with all our lovely, lovely parents. So it's 9:30 on Teachers Talk Radio. I'm Emma Shepherd and this is The Morning Break. If you've just joined us, we've been hearing from middle leaders today, sharing their experiences and tips. We've heard from Sondas Boker, who is head of English in Northumberland, and Sitara Amin, a Key Stage 3 history lead in Cambridgeshire. And in a little while, we're going to hear from a pastoral middle leadership leader, just to add a little bit of variety and move away a little bit from the subject leader route. So our next guest is going to be Tess Tweeddale, who is a deputy head of sixth form and maths teacher in Hertfordshire. And she's also the Hertfordshire regional representative for the MTPT project. So some of you may know her from coffee mornings that she has hosted or attended. Tess does love a good chat and a coffee. Good morning, Tess. How are you this morning?
Hello, I'm fine.
Well, hi. And Tess, you are just started your second maternity leave, haven't you? So you are waiting impatiently for baby to arrive, or waiting patiently?
Yeah, definitely impatiently. I'm currently sat on my ball doing some bouncing, trying to get this baby out.
When's your due date?
It's at the weekend coming, so yeah, quite soon now, but I'm kind of keen to get going now, you know, meet the baby.
Meet the baby. It's always lovely when you get on maternity leave and you just think, right, where are you? Let's see your little face now. Was your daughter on time, your older one?
No, she was not. She was late. I'm kind of, yeah, expecting to be waiting a little while still.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to keep you distracted this morning chatting to us on Teachers Talk Radio. So Tess, you are currently a deputy head of sixth form in Hertfordshire, and you've been doing this role for about 3 years now, is that correct?
Yes. So I got the role when I was on my previous maternity leave, actually, and brought the baby with me to the interview.
Amazing.
And yes, been back doing it ever since and loving it, really. It's been great.
Brilliant. And so as we've heard from subject leaders this morning, and they've been able to talk quite enthusiastically about their curriculum, about working with their teams, and about the sort of accountability involved in the subject leader, middle leader role. But as a pastoral leader, what does success look like for a pastoral leader? How do we measure that, or how do we aim for that?
Yeah, you know, it's a really tricky question, that question, because I think when you try and measure success too much with the quantitative side of things, then you kind of miss half the point of pastoral, I feel. My background is I'm a maths and statistics teacher, and my degree was in maths and statistics. So I love data and I love spreadsheets and I love absolutely analysing everything that I can analyse. But with a pastoral role, if you just focus on the success from a spreadsheet or from, you know, attendance data or results or behaviour points or whatever it is, you kind of don't fully get the full picture of what pastoral leadership is all about. And so it is much harder to measure the other side of the coin, the kind of more qualitative side of things, your relationships and, you know, what parents think of you and your kind of impact on a year group and how you make them feel. And I think that's really important stuff. Your warmth and your approachability are some of the most important skills and just qualities about being a pastoral leader, but definitely harder to measure. So when I was thinking about this, and one way I've measured it is cards at Christmas, you know, what the students say to you when they give you cards. I mean, I'm not that bothered when they give me candles and soap. I'm always like, oh, I've got too much candles and soap. But I love it when they write things in the cards, and that's where you really do get a sense of your impact in a way that you might not get day to day. And then on top of that, you know, just knocks on the door, on your office door. Oh, miss, can I have a word about this? And I mean, my school certainly has quite an interesting setup pastorally. So there's a house system as well as the sixth form system. And so when a student picks to come to you over another person that they could have come to, I think that's a real measure of your impact as well. And just, you know, things like reading a room when you're doing an assembly, reading a room and knowing that, you know, hearing the laughs when you know you've said something funny or that's resonated with them. That side of thing is much harder to measure. Of course, you can measure the other side of it too, you know, like the spreadsheet side of it. And that is obviously important. But yeah, it's the other side of it that gives you the satisfaction, I think, even though it is much harder to kind of tangibly pinpoint what you've done or how.
And I think I forget every time that we chat, Tess, which I don't know how I forget, but as you've been talking there, listeners might like to know that I actually went as a student to the school that Tess currently teaches in. So everything that you've spoken about there in terms of sixth forms and the house system, I was a head of house when I was at school.
Were you?
Yes, I know the knock on the office door well. And I think you're right in terms of the relationships there. The pastoral leaders, the heads of house and the heads of sixth form are some of the sort of biggest characters that you have, or that we definitely had when I was at school, at your school, Tess. And I think because the sixth form role in particular, you're that bit older and you're more likely to have more adult relationships with your teachers. Of course, I was head of house, says Lindsay on the chat. I got a badge. So that more adult relationship that you have with the teachers is where you start looking for other adults to take questions about your future, questions about your friendships or your working relationships with teachers, or, you know, you've got that relationship with sixth formers that you wouldn't necessarily have with a year seven who maybe isn't ready to work on a more mature level with adults in their life. So I think it is a really special role. So you mentioned there sort of what families think of you and what the students think of you. How much of your time do you think is spent just building relationship and having conversations with students and their families?
Oh, a lot of it, actually. So most of the time when I'm not teaching, there's usually somebody in my office, which does mean that your planning and marking time gets completely squished as a middle leader. But I actually think having that availability is really important in this kind of role. And, you know, when you get a knock on the door, being able to say, oh, no, it's fine, come in. And often you don't know what the chat is going to be about. You don't know if it's going to be a quick UCAS question or whether it's going to be a whole half an hour thing. But sometimes that's the nature of the role. And I mean, I love to talk. So I always love to have students in my office and just talking to them. And often it is centered around UCAS and their futures, and where they want to go, and questions of that nature. But yeah, a lot of the role is just talking, really, and having that time. And I think that that's something that's sometimes taken for granted, is approachability and availability. We're all squished in schools all the time, and we've all got too much going on all the time. But what I hope that I've done in the role is, you know, left my door open, so that students know my office is right in the sixth form centre. So if they're up there working, if my door's open, they know they can pop in. And it's very, very rare that I would say, oh, no, sorry, now's not a good time. I'd only do that really if I was desperately trying to get something done that's already overdue. But generally speaking, it's about being available. And with parents too, I mean, I think parents is an interesting one at sixth form level, because you have to appreciate that some students don't involve their parents as much at sixth form, and actually we don't involve the parents as much. We try very much to deal with the students more so. I know that will depend on the culture of the school you're in. My school, we tend to have parents who want to be incredibly involved, and actually they need to step back, and we have to kind of train our parents a bit. You know, when students apply to university, they're adults, and it's their UCAS form, and it's not their parents. And their parents might desperately want them to go and be a doctor, but the student might not want to be a doctor. So we do a bit of management there with the parents and kind of resetting their expectations. But equally, there are times where, you know, it's a case by case basis where parents need to be very much involved or want to be. And so, yeah, that's always an interesting side of sixth form, I think, is how much to involve parents and how much to not. And yeah, so I'd say less of my time is spent talking to parents, but there is a fair amount of fielding emails from them, I suppose.
Sounds like a real emotional diplomacy and resilience is required, both to manage your own moments when a child comes to your room or student comes to your room and you're like, oh God, not now. But you know that's part of your role to say, absolutely, come in. But also those conversations you just mentioned with parents, that does sound very delicate sometimes. And we don't know our students' contexts. We don't know what repercussions those will have at home. And so having the diplomacy to say the right thing at the right time for the student, especially if they don't feel that they can say these things themselves, is really important. So in terms of, you talked a little bit about UCAS there, and we've talked about measuring success through relationships and the sort of less statistical things. Could you share one example in recent years where you have sort of reflected and thought, that is a really successful role moment in my pastoral role? I'm so proud of myself, or I'm so proud of what has been achieved there.
So, well, one just silly one, really, I suppose, is when I came into the role, you know, we get the statistics from UCAS of which students have applied to which universities each year. And when I started the role, nobody was applying to Scottish universities, and I'm a big fan of Scottish universities. I went to Edinburgh, but I'm a big fan of the flexibility that they allow in a degree. A lot of our students are high achieving and they don't know which subject to pursue, so I always guide them towards, oh, have you considered Scotland, where you get a lot more freedom and you can have a little bit more choice and chopping and changing. And after my first year of going through and leading the whole UCAS process, we got the data through and we had like 40 applications to Edinburgh and, you know, and to Glasgow and to St Andrews, and you can really analyze when I started the job and how many extra applications we had there, which I just thought was funny. You know, I try not to push just where I went too much, but I thought that was really interesting. I'd clearly done a lot of talking about it, and then I thought, oh gosh, I better you know, become a bit more neutral next year and not push one place too much.
Wow. But Edinburgh is a fantastic university, though.
Yeah. In terms of other things in the role, I guess personal statements is another thing that I had a big push on. My first year that I was doing it, I was quite shocked by the lack of, you know, we've got bright students and the level of their personal statements, the kind of quality of writing was quite poor. And I teach maths, you know, so I've never really been involved with the writing side of school before. And that was a real eye-opener to me. So I did a big push the first couple of years to get the standard up and to, you know, the way we deliver that side of things with tutors and how to support students better and make them more aware of what a good personal statement should look like, to the point where this last year going through, I could measure my impact there because I wasn't hauling students in every day saying, look, you can't write this. This doesn't look okay.
Oh, you know, now I just freed up some time for you.
It has freed up a lot of time. Yeah. They're much, much better standard. And I'd say that that's also not just down to what I put in place, but also the tutors that we have who are fantastic. You know, have offered so much support to the students as well. That's been really great. And as you say, has freed up a lot of time. So it's been win-win, really.
So just to end our chat this morning, Tess, we've had NRGD5 on the chat saying, just tuned in and so great to hear schools accommodating interviews with babies. And Sondas, who we heard from earlier, saying bringing baby to interview is wonderful. So that was just a reference to your application for your current role. But I think that there's a congratulations in order. Now, you are 8 months pregnant, ready for your baby to arrive, hopefully this weekend. But do you want to tell us about why we should be congratulating you again today?
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, I very, very heavily pregnant interviewed for a new role yesterday as a head of sixth form, which I was successful in. So, yeah, quite a strange time to get a new job, but very exciting as well to have something new to return to after this next baby.
I am smiling from ear to ear. I'm so, so pleased for you. And Lindsay says, amazing. Congratulations on the chat. So thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all those insights about pastoral leadership. And also a huge congratulations again, both for the role and also for imminent arrival of baby. Hope we get to see lots of photos when they arrive.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Have a lovely rest of the day. So we have been hearing this morning from pastoral leaders and subject leaders, and we heard their fantastic stories of success, both in her pastoral role, but also in terms of her career progression, whilst Tess also has been developing personally and becoming a mother for the first and second time. Our final guest for this morning is a subject leader for languages, curriculum leader for languages. Hannah Pinkham works at Reach Academy Feltham, and it is great to have a fellow linguist on the call, Hannah. I'm a French speaker, so would you like to introduce yourself in a language of your choice this morning?
Buenos días, soy Hannah Pinkham.
Buenos días.
Profesora de español y francés. You can probably hear my little boy in the background. He's reorganizing the clothes drawer. So,
oh, brilliant. So we've had twins this morning, a bump, imminent bump, and now a tidying toddler. Or is he a toddler yet, or is he still?
He's a toddler, yeah, 16 months old. He might be a bit annoyed by me not speaking with him directly, so we'll just do what we can.
He can more than join in if he wants to, and we will talk around him and invite him into the conversation. What's his name, Hannah? If he hears
Enzo.
His name, maybe he'd like that.
Enzo.
Morning, Enzo.
Good morning.
There we go.
Weird look.
There we go. So maybe if we keep saying Enzo's name, then he'll stick with us and know that this is the radio show for him. So yes. Hannah, you're currently on leave with Enzo, but
I'm not. I work part time.
Oh, Oh, okay. Oh, brilliant. I got that wrong then. So you're on your non-school day, your Enzo day today. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Monday and Tuesday.
Oh, brilliant. And so you are a part-time curriculum leader for languages at Reach in Feltham. Yes. And so what is your, we've heard a lot of things from subject middle leaders today, but what has been your favourite thing about being a curriculum leader for your languages department?
So initially I was actually quite wary of becoming a middle leader. I think my perceptions of it was that it was quite admin heavy and I couldn't really see how I would personally enjoy that. But then, and so initial conversations I had at school were like, oh no, I'm not really sure. And then when I took on the role, I realized just like the admin is obviously a part of it, but actually the best thing for me is how much more of a wider impact you can have on pupils and staff. So obviously when you're like in the classroom, you have your impact on your classes and to a certain extent your colleagues. But I think as a middle leader, you just get to have so much more of a wider impact. So I guess like obviously you're developing your team and you get to have lots of impact in your department meetings with curriculum development stuff and CPD that you can run. And I think like I realized as I've done the role that you can really make the role, you can kind of emphasize the bits that are important, that are necessary. So obviously we have to do the admin, but I have tried to focus very much on a kind of improvement in teaching practice rather than, and curriculum, rather than lots and lots and lots of admin. Obviously, if you love the data, then you could do that too. So I think it's quite a, I don't know, I'm lucky at Reach, it's quite a flexible role. I have a lot of autonomy, which is amazing.
I was just thinking, I suppose that if you have a sort of reframed in terms of what you want to achieve as in your part, in your leadership role there, that the data and the admin actually then becomes quite purposeful in terms of what it is telling you about that specific focus. So if your focus is teaching and learning in the department, the data will inform that, and so it becomes maybe a little bit less dry than I agree with you, admin is not my favorite thing, but it starts to become more alive, doesn't it, in terms of what it's showing you about your foci.
And I think when you strip back anything that you don't need, you as you say, like the data becomes much more powerful, and if you're only looking at the stuff that is really relevant and is giving you the information you need to drive improvement, then yeah, it becomes, as you say, much more almost enjoyable if I'm honest.
And so is it just Spanish that you teach at Reach, or do you have a range of languages that you're teaching?
We teach French and Spanish, and we have a lot of support from SLT on that. We have a really supportive SLT for languages. Ed is a fluent speaker of French, which helps us a lot. And we're about to introduce Arabic to year 9. It's really, really exciting. So I think that's a good example of, as a middle leader, you also have quite a lot of responsibility to amplify the voices of others. So people who are in your department or other teachers, I think because you're still, well, certainly in the middle leader roles at Reach, you're still firmly rooted in the classroom. You still have a good portion of classroom time. You're not that far away removed from other teachers. So I think you can amplify their voices, and you have a bit of a read of the staff room that maybe people who are higher up don't have as much. So I think you can, again, that's another area of influence that you can have, and you can use that for really good purposeful things, I think.
And so when you talked about improvement and driving improvement before, does that include sort of the uptake of languages at Key Stage 4 and the introduction of new languages, or is that just part of sort of a wider curriculum design decisions?
So we're really lucky that languages are compulsory at Reach at Key Stage 4. So we haven't really had to do that. It's been more about obviously improving results, but improving our curriculum and making sure. So our big drive has been to make sure all pupils, or as many pupils as possible, take languages and are successful in languages. And we've kind of changed our curriculum approach based on trying to get as many pupils as possible. So we always enter about 75% of our cohorts. It looks like next year we're going to be able to enter about 90%. So we're already seeing some improvement.
Fantastic.
There, which is very much our kind of reason for being.
And I suppose as a languages teacher in our current climate, our sort of our Brexit and these strange sort of global but isolated times of the pandemic, I suppose there's more and more a case of pushing for languages at a time where they might be quite vulnerable to disappearing.
Yeah, I think so. And again, like I can't claim any responsibility for that. I'm really lucky that we have a great supportive SLT. They have allowed me to introduce Spanish and they're allowing us to introduce Arabic. And again, we have so much autonomy on that, that as long as we can kind of prove that we're going to have a go at it and it's going to be well thought through and good, then we're really lucky to be able to do that. So yeah, I think definitely we haven't really seen an impact of Brexit, in school on languages, because mm-hmm. it's just kind of a default that they do it. There's not even like a consideration that they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So we're really lucky.
Brilliant. Sounds, and I mean, Reach is fairly well known in terms of the educational circles. I think there's so many good things that people say about Reach. I know Bex Kramer is quite involved in the MTPT project, and so we have chat quite a bit in the past. Just, I'd love to visit one day just to see how things work on the ground there. So thanks for giving us a bit of insight in terms of the MFL department there. And we've probably got a few people listening this morning who are interested in stepping into their first middle leader role, maybe even some teachers who, like you, would favour flexibility in that middle leader role. So thank you for sharing that, because I think there's a myth sometimes that the middle leadership role can't be done flexibly, and you and so many others prove that it really can. But for those teachers who are looking to step up, what would you say are your top tips?
Sorry, I need to caveat this, that I've only been promoted internally, so I can't speak to the experience of moving to another school to become a middle leader. But when I was thinking about that, I found it really important to identify the gaps between what a classroom teacher is doing and what the MLT role seemed to require. And I think I made it really clear that that was something I was interested in. So I think, like, you can start that conversation with your line manager, or you can start that conversation with people that will listen about looking for a middle leadership role. And then I think people hopefully will be really supportive about helping you to fill in any gaps there. So some of the gaps that I was thinking about that are kind of like common differences between class subject teacher role and then moving into middle leadership were things like coaching or line management of people. So you probably haven't done that as a classroom teacher. And so it's unlikely that you'll be able to line manage people just because you want to. But maybe if you could coach someone or offer to drop into someone's lessons and support them with something, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone doing the same subject as you, but just going into like a trainee's lesson or an NQT's lesson, somewhere where you can offer that support and kind of practice it. And I think, like, obviously that stuff is good for it looks good at interview, but it's more like for you to work out whether you actually enjoy those aspects of the role and whether MLT is mm-hmm. actually right for you. And then I think in terms of like curriculum design stuff, if you haven't had an opportunity to do that, I think, again, you can speak to your head of department or another subject head of department if they're not super supportive, and discuss like what's their approach, how have they done it, and maybe offer to tweak something or redesign something that already exists. I think that's an easier starting point than overhauling an entire scheme of work. It's easier if you say, oh, I noticed this could do a bit of tweaking, can I have a go at it? And I think, like, as long as you're offering in a really nice supportive way, people will be keen. And I think definitely reach out on Twitter if you're department situation isn't super positive, then there are loads of people on Twitter that will support you, and that's really nice, and sort of find your tribe on Twitter. And then I think another gap is the training of others. So again, as a subject teacher, you might not have had lots of experience there, and you could, for example, offer to lead a department meeting, or you could offer to lead a whole school CPD if that's appropriate for you. You could present at a conference. I know they do lots of like teach meet stuff. You could do a 5-minute thing there, and that just gives you some practice of that and gets you to kind of fine tune your tone and the ideas that you have, and kind of see if they're interesting to people. And I think if you wanted to, I don't know if everyone has this, but like attending network meetings on behalf of the head of department, I know I've appreciated that when people have offered to do that for me. And then I think that the kind of one of the bigger things, and something that I've found interesting to work on, is your presence around school. And I think that's something that like a class teacher feels their influence is in the classroom, obviously, or maybe your form room as well. And then as middle leadership, you're that much more of a role model to teachers and to students. And thinking about being seen in corridors, being part of duties, making sure that you know everybody's names, being present at transitions. And, you know, if there's duty cover available, maybe stepping up and doing a couple of those to see if that's something that fits with you and works for you. And just to kind of be a bit more of a presence around school, because I think that can be, not always, but can be quite a big difference.
Yeah, so some really, really practical and proactive tips in terms of figuring out the what experience isn't there and ways to get it. I think some of the things that you've said work really nicely in their mentoring role. So the opportunity to mentor trainees is often Absolutely. Something that is not given to heads of department because they've got other things to do. So volunteering for that or learning how to take on parts of that mentoring role is also really helpful. So lots of praise for you on the chat, Hannah, in terms of the middle leadership role. Cherish says that she's also a flexible middle leader as well. And Sandos saying that she is going back 0.6 after her maternity leave. Tess saying, I think it's brilliant when schools support flexible middle leaders. And lots of praise for SLT as well. So some Sitara in our clip earlier talked about the importance of communicating with her head of department as a key stage 3 lead, and you've made then that extra connection between the support of SLT and that communication between yourself and SLT and the way that you can empower others there. So thank you so much for bringing that up and for chatting to us this morning, and thank you very much to Enzo for being such a lovely guest with us today. I hope you have a lovely rest of the day, Hannah. Thank you for joining us. So we have heard from a range of middle leaders this morning, and we've had some really lovely comments on the chat. If we go back to Tess talking to us about the relationship building that she has had to do as a deputy head of sixth form and now a newly appointed head of sixth forms. Congratulations again. Sandos said, I really don't remember any lessons I had when I was at school, but I really remember those conversations with some of my kindest teachers. They really influenced me. So the importance there of relationships and NRG D5, loving the emotional diplomacy phrase that I used in terms of working with students and also their family. Lindsay saying, what a lovely impact I've had on the lives of those young people in the sixth form role. And recently there, hearing from Hannah, a great deal of praise for her role modelling a flexible middle leadership role. So she works 0.6, 3 days a week, I think, as far as I understand. And I think there's a big myth around the opportunities to work flexibly as a middle leader. There's maybe the perception that people have to be there all the time, but actually really nice demonstration that that is not necessarily the case. So if middle leadership is something that you are interested in, but flexible working is important to you, then it can be done with the right conversations and the right context. So thank you so much for everybody who has joined us today on Teachers Talk Radio on the morning break.
Live from London, this is The Morning Break with Emma Shepherd on Teachers Talk Radio.
So thank you again so much to all of our guests who joined us today to share their experiences, tips and the nuances and variety involved in the middle leadership role. And for everyone who has shared their comments and their questions in the chat via the Podbean app. You can catch up on the show.
Live from London, this is The Morning Break with Emma. Shepherd on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TT Radio.